It's time for Mind Your Business on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network to present the weekly business radio show produced by the award-winning marketing firm Bottom Line Marketing Group, BLMG, sharing business and marketing strategies to make you and your business successful. Now, here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis.
Yes, thank you for joining me here on another edition of Mind Your Business, broadcasting at 10 p.m. on Sunday nights throughout the New York, New Jersey metro area on 710 WOR and throughout America and throughout the world on the powerful iHeartRadio network. Yes, thank you, New York. The Nielsen ratings, which we check regularly, Nielsen, of course, is the global measurement and data analytics company, has our show in the top 10 in New York AM radio. How special is that? And, of course, that's a testament to the amazing guests that we have each week and the great listeners who have come to expect great business, important content. Tonight's show is so special. But, you know, it's radio, so I got to keep you in suspense just a little bit. You know, that's radio, you know. The weekly show, of course, has featured so many incredible guests, including Stephen Sadoff, the former CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue, Beth Comstock, former vice chair and CMO at GE, Joe Hart, president and CEO of Dale Carnegie. I can't go through the whole list. We've interviewed over 400 people. We got to get to our guests. Before we do, a special shout out and a thank you to the great team here that's at BLMG that makes the show happen. Sruli, Michal, Betzalel, Bracha, Miriam, thank you. To Darren and Robert at 710 WOR, and to all those who stopped me, and we are syndicated on various channels. In particular, I'm giving a shout out and a mention to our YouTube channel. Tonight's show is going to go up on our YouTube channel. When you subscribe to our YouTube channel, we're at 710 WOR, Mind Your Business, you will automatically be notified. If you keep notifications on, you'll be notified when this show and all our episodes go live. Well, without further ado, tonight's incredible guests. Dennis Budnick, the Chief Culture Officer at Investors Bank, and Rob Shearer, CEO of Comfort Cases. A little bit of background. First about Investors Bank, headquartered in Short Hills, New Jersey. They're a full-service commercial bank that has been servicing customers for nearly a century. They started in 1926. With over $27 billion in assets and a network of 150 retail branches throughout the tri-state area, Investors Bank delivers personalized services and products tailored to the needs of its customers, consumers, and businesses alike. Investors Bank is also committed to the communities it serves through the Investors Foundation. It has contributed over $40 million since its inception back in 2005 to help support important community and nonprofit organizations that impact all of us. About Comfort Cases, Rob Shearer is the CEO of Comfort Cases. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to children in foster care. Comfort Cases provides a bag, this is really unique, to foster children filled with basic necessities. Their goal is to provide each child with dignity and a sense of belonging. They engage communities and educate the public about the issues facing youth in foster care. And they need a voice. Special thank you before I get to my guests, Deborah Trotter, Jason Bachrach, Dominica Lennart, Carrie Pensick, Cassia J. Borelli, Barry Carr. It takes quite a few people to put together a show like this. A very, very special and warm welcome, Dennis and Rob. Thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you so much for having us.
First, just going to open. I can't wait to get to Rob, but just a quick question to Dennis first. Okay, Dennis, before we get started, I want to thank Investors Bank for sponsoring tonight's show and for introducing the Business Exchange broadcast here on Mind Your Business. Could you tell us about this initiative, the Business Exchange broadcast created by Investors Bank?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, Chuck. And first of all, I want to thank you. I'm really excited to be here with you and Rob. And to really broadcast a not only an emotionally touching message, but a very important message that has been easily overlooked for years. And now we're paying attention to it. So a little bit about the Investors Business Exchange. You know, our bank has always been committed to not only serving the business community through products, like every other bank, but our twist was really contributing to the intellectual side of business. Can we come up with ideas? Can we introduce our business community to people that could help our businesses continue to grow, sustain their growth, Be innovative. And so in the past, before the pandemic, we did business exchanges live. We did events. We had major national speakers come in. We did events for the non-for-profit community, which you'll see how important that is to the Investors Bank culture and business strategy. And now when COVID came, yeah, that was shut down. We couldn't get people together. And so we decided to create this virtual community called the Investors Bank Business Exchange. Here's the purpose. We want to still stay in touch with the businesses. And if we have to do it virtually, we'll do it virtually. And what's happening is people are resonating. Business owners are joining. They're coming together. Now, when we do an event, we bring a speaker that has a message that's worth hearing. And at the same time, we let the businesses connect virtually, exchange ideas, exchange obstacles, exchange strategies, and also exchange contact information so that we could keep the business community continuing to work together. And if we have to go over, and we're having a good time with that, but we're also being successful with that. And so being on your show today is a continued extension. How many more people can we touch with a message of hope, with a message of business strategy so we can help people get through not only COVID, but the everyday obstacles of business?
Now, Dennis, later in the show, I definitely want to get to the, I guess, the elephant in the room, and that is, while it's so special that Investors makes a concerted effort to channel energies to reach out to the human side, because at the end of the day, a bank is out there to assist businesses in doing business. But there's a human side. We're all human. We have to care for each other, and how that translates and actually even benefits businesses, which we'll get to in a bit. But I got to get to Rob. Rob, again, really special to connect and have you on the show. You have a powerful story. Now, the show is only an hour, so I'm sure you can. When you get up on stage, it's more than an hour. I know that. But perhaps the 3-4 minute version, if it's possible.
You know, I always find that funny. You know, for those of you who follow me or have seen my TED Talk, you know, even when TED Talk told me that I can only have 15 minutes, I was like, oh my gosh, how do I do this? Well, let me tell you, I will make a good effort. Okay. You know, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. I truly do believe that any time that we can talk about our future, it is so important. And I will tell you, talking about kids in foster care, they are your future. I was one of the 438,000 kids who was in our system, that has absolutely been shattered for more years than we even can imagine. You know, I was 12 years old when I walked into my first home carrying a trash bag. I will never forget it. I'm the youngest of 10 kids. My parents lived in and out of every shelter in Maryland, Virginia, and DC. And I've come from probably the worst abuse you could probably imagine. But I just knew I deserved to have better. And so what I did was I put my nose to the ground and I went to school every day. And as I watched my brothers and sisters fall to the wayside, become the statistics that we see today in our system, teenage pregnancy, drug addiction, incarceration, I just knew that something was better for me. And then I finally made it. I made it to my 12th grade year. I was going to be the first person in my family to ever graduate. I remember that day in the fall of 1984 when I came home, and there sitting in the living room was my trash bag. My trash bag that I had not seen for years. And I remember looking at my foster father and saying, "Why is my trash bag there?" And he says, "You have to leave." And I looked at my foster mother. And by the way, I say my foster mother because I felt like she was my mother. I thought she loved me. And I said, "What do you mean?" And she says, "You're 18 years old and we're no longer going to get the check. So you can no longer live here." Wow. What did I do? I remember that first night living on the streets and the night after that and the night after that. But every single day, I would take my trash bag and I would hide it behind the school. And I would walk into the school with my head held high. And I would hope kids would make fun of me because I can't tell you the last time I'd had a haircut, I'd showered, or much less I'd brushed my teeth. But I just knew that if I educated my mind, I could educate my future. Day after day, month after month, I had a job that was paying $3.35 an hour. And by the way, my friends, that was minimum wage back then. Mm-hmm. And they found out that I was the homeless kid. And so they would leave the outside door in the bathroom unlocked so I could sleep there at night. And when I wasn't there, I was sitting in the public library, gathering as much information as I could to fill my brain with as much knowledge so I could go forward. And then May 1985, I'll never forget the time the teacher lined us all up with our caps and gowns. I had finally made it. I was going to get this piece of paper that my community had told me that if I get it, it would make something of myself. Mm-hmm. As I would listen to in the auditorium as people were clapping and screaming and yelling at kids' names, and then they called my name. Exactly. Nothing. No one clapped. No one cheered. No one cared. See, my community was right. I was invisible and I was disposable. I remember leaving that auditorium and going to the back lot and sitting down and truly crying for the first time. I cried for my mom and dad. I wanted to feel that cigarette on my leg that my father used to put out on me when I was a little boy so bad, just because then I knew he was there. I cried for my foster parents. How could they have given up on me because of a check? And then I cried for all of you, my community. How could you have failed me? See, the fact is if you looked at me and you acknowledged me, then you'd have to realize you failed me. So at that moment, I walked the streets for a couple of weeks. See, the fact is kids in foster care have three choices. Choice number one, we can give in. We can be the statistics that you all expect us to be, as we know that 80% of all prisons are filled with kids from foster care. We know that teenage pregnancy is higher in children in foster care than anywhere else. We also know that drug addiction in foster care is higher than anywhere else. Or I could give in. I could break the law, go to jail, just sit there, like my brothers and sisters were already doing. Or I could give it all I got. And that's what I chose to do. I chose to join the United States Navy. I chose to become a very successful businessman. And I chose to never look back until my beautiful babies arrived. That's right. 13 years ago, four of the most amazing humans arrived in my home, and all four of them carrying a trash bag. You know, I was a banker, and by the way, for me, it was all about what the bottom line. It was about the big house and the fancy cars and all the money that I could make. It wasn't about you all, but it was about what you thought of me until my babies arrived. And that was truly the stepping stone of where I'm at today.
Rob, where do I jump in? Wow, getting a handle on this, and your powerful story, the way you present it, and the way you grabbed a hold of yourself, and how God blessed you to where you are today. November is National Adoption Awareness Month. Perhaps you could talk about your story and then transferring that into comfort cases to do away with that garbage bag.
Yeah. You know, for me, we get 2 months, May, which is National Foster Care Awareness Month, and November, which is National Adoption Awareness Month. You know, in November, more children in foster care are adopted than any other month. We have over 100,000 children who are waiting in the system for an adoption. Their parents' rights have been TPR'd. They're able to be adopted immediately. The average age is 6, and they just sit there. Well, just like my 4 kids. You know, my kids were 4, 2, 2, and 6 months when they arrived in my home. We signed 2 of our adoptions in the month of November, and I'll never forget it. But what I didn't forget was the trash bag. 9 years ago, as I was sitting in my office as an executive at, you know, a bank, I did this big toy drive in D.C. every year. It was so big that Ben's Chili Bowl would allow me to set up a big tent. And if you go down to Ben's Chili Bowl today, you'll see my picture inside with all the toys that we would gather. Because, you know, see, that's what we people do. We gather all these toys during the holidays for those needy kids. We pat ourselves on the back because we think we've made a difference. And then on the 26th of December, we all wake up and life is back normal for us. Most of us don't even think about those kids. They don't think about the fact that half of the toys are broken. This one particular year, I wanted to do something different. And I said, I want to eliminate these, a trash bag. See, I will tell you that if you come to my office, I keep this trash bag in my desk drawer. And I have kept the trash bag in my desk drawer for 27 years. Why? Because I don't want to forget where I came from. At that moment, I gathered all of my senior employees, some members of my community, some people from my church, and I told them my story. A story that I had not shared with very few people. The story of the 12-year-old boy who walked into the bathroom of the first foster home and saw a bar of soap laying in the tub, a bar of soap that you all expected me to use, even though I didn't even know what their middle names were. I talked about my daughter at the age of 4 when she arrived, that we were her third foster home, and that how she had not smiled the entire day until she walked over and she pulled up a nightgown and she tore a tag off and she smiled for the first time. I said, Amaya, why are you smiling? She said, Mr. Rob, I've never owned a new nightgown before. See, that's just not acceptable. So we started to put cases together, new pajamas, every child to have their own lotion, their own shampoo, their own conditioner, and their own bar of soap. I wanted to make sure that every child got their own activities. The kids that are under the age of 10 get a coloring book and crayons, and kids over the age of 10 get a journal and a pen and pencil set. You know, several years ago, I was filming a CNN special, and I actually was in the Midwest, and there was a young boy who was getting one of our cases. He's sitting on the floor, he unzipped it, and as he unzipped it, he pulled things out, and he started to cry. I stopped the cameras, I sat down on the floor, and I asked him, why are you crying? He said, Mr. Rob, I've been in foster care for 3 years. I've been in 11 homes. He says, in every home I went in there, I had all this music in my mind. He says, the only thing I ever wanted, and he pulled out his journal. He says, there's a journal to write it in. It was a 50-cent composition book. But to that boy, it was gold. To that boy, it was his future. To that boy, it showed him that his community loved him. As he cried on, he looked at me and he said, why? I said, why what? He said, why would people who don't even know me would give me all of this new items? I reminded him, as I remind people every day, and I remind your listeners, you do not have to know someone to love them. You don't have to know someone to love them. We want to make sure that every child gets a book. You know, as an author, I wrote A Forever Family for two reasons. Number one, love it in your mind. Number two, love it in your heart. But the most flattering thing you could ever do for a book is pass it on. Pass it on. See, there's no such thing as a used book. It's only a book that's been loved. And then give every kid a stuffy. I don't care whether you're a newborn or you're 19 or even my 55-year-old guy. All of us love a good stuffed animal. And then finally, a blanket. You know, my son Grayson, I get emotional every time I talk about this boy. He was 2 years old when he arrived in my home. His mother was 12. Came into my home with bleeding of the brain, shaken baby syndrome, and 3 broken ribs. So you must understand, kids come into the system because of a choice of someone else. And at the age of 6, he said, Daddy, we've got to give everybody a blankie. I said, a blankie? I said, Grayson, you know these kids are not cold. He said, I know, Daddy, but every time they wrap themselves up in their blankie, they knew we loved them. Wow. Shouldn't we all know that? We know we all feel it. We want to be loved. We want to be wanted. We want to know we matter. So that's how Comfort Cases started 9 years ago this month.
Do you have a count how many you've given out to date?
Yes. We literally have given out 150,000 cases to all 50 states, D.C. and Puerto Rico. And by the way, let me tell you something, my friend. You talked about the pandemic. When March, we all woke up and we didn't know what was going on in our lives. Right. Children in foster care feel that every single day. But for my family, for my organization, we had to figure out what else we could do. And so what we did was we opened up a comfort case center in the United Kingdom to take care of the 86,000 kids in the UK that also are carrying trash bags. So we are now an international nonprofit. And I will remind you that we are 96% volunteer ran. I believe that if you teach your community a problem, they will solve it. And that's what we've done.
Rob, before we go to a commercial break, just another quick question. Through all the pain, through all the hardship, through everything you've been through, you somehow had the wherewithal to stay true to yourself. What could you share a secret on that? For people in business, whether they're having a hard time or whether they don't realize they really are, they have challenges, are not owning up to it. What's your suggestion on how to on how to deal with that?
You know, I believe each and every one of us are leaders, every one of us, no matter where we are or the title that's behind our name. And we must pull deep within ourselves to get that grit that we all have. You know, for me, it was staying humble, always staying humble and true to myself. You know, those who follow me on social media, I'm very, very open about my life and very, very open about my path. And as I posted something yesterday, I reminded people that you cannot think about yesterday. You cannot think about yesterday and try to beat yourself up for the things that you should have done then. The thing you should focus on is what can you change today? Today, you know, and that's how I live my life.
Special Tonight Show, brought to you by Investors Bank and the Business Exchange Broadcast. Wow. By the way, for those just tuning in, no worries, by Tuesday morning, this will be up on the podcast channel, MYB Radio, whether you listen on Spotify or iTunes, it will all, of course, it will go up because Rob is sharing such incredible information on how really to be successful in life. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hi, honey. I know you said you'll get to it, but the family picture still needs to be hung up on the wall. Maybe you can pick up the tools you need on your way home?
Don't push it off again. Let Mr. Super Handyman handle it. Call 718-218-5555 to let Mr. Super know what you need done. That's 718-218-5555. 718-218-5555. Let Mr. Super do something super for you.
And we're back. Mind your business with Isaac Saflis right here on 710 WOR. Tonight's guests, Dennis Budnick and Rob Scheer. Dennis, of course, leads the business at Investors Bank and the Business Exchange Broadcast, which was part of Dennis's vision out at Investors Bank. And he introduced to us Rob Scheer. Rob Scheer is the CEO of Comfort Cases, and we've been talking about Rob's incredible journey. I'm going to hand it over to Dennis. Dennis, again, thank you for co-hosting me here on 710 WR, tonight's show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, Rob, I'm listening to your story again, and I've heard your story many times, and every time I hear it, there's certain spots I'm like, here we go. I'm going to get choked up. So because it is a story that's emotionally moving. But, you know, you talk about volunteerism and you have literally thousands of people helping you. If I had to choose, why would I choose Comfort Cases as an organization I would not only contribute to, but have my employees and myself and my family go hands on? Why you?
Well, you know, first of all, we need to educate ourselves on nonprofits, okay? It's very, very important that when you are donating your dollar, that you know that your dollar is going towards a mission. If those of you who are, you know, debating whether or not what nonprofits you want to get involved in, I tell every one of our donors and volunteers, look at our 990s. That's the first thing I want you to do.
Okay? 990.
that is public record of how we spend the money that you give us, okay? And you will see that 96 cents of every single dollar goes to the mission. That is just uncalled for and uncommon within our nonprofit world. Then number two, realize that you as communities, and by the way, let us understand something. Your community is not your zip code. Understand that. I repeat, your community is not your zip code. It's our human race. What affects me and my little town of Darnestown, Maryland, affects people in Red Bank, New Jersey. And what affects people in Red Bank, New Jersey, affects people in New York City. And so we have to understand, by volunteering within your community, you build a stronger foundation. And a stronger foundation means a stronger community. And then why comfort cases? Well, why not? 438,000 children sitting in a system that needs a community to know that they are loved. You know, I repeat, and I say this quite often, either you help take care of these kids today, or you will take care of them tomorrow, because you will continue to build prison after prison after prison. And so, I think our charity is doing exactly what it needs to do. It brings our community together. It shows them how they can give hope and dignity to our youth that are in foster care. And by the way, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of volunteers all over the world that are helping us, you know, because they truly do want to make a difference. So that's why I think Comfort Cases is your choice.
Thank you.
I'm now going to turn to Rob, but I'd love Dennis's take on this as well. And that is, why is it so important for a business to be wired into helping nonprofits, into reaching out into areas which might seem counterintuitive, like let's just focus on the bottom line, let's try to make another deal. But say, wait a second, just like investors started the Investors Foundation, why is it so important for a business to be wired this way? Rob first and then Dennis.
So I will have to tell you, for 27 years, I was in the for-profit world, okay? Let's all understand that. You know, there's two things, your dot-coms and your dot-orgs. Your dot-coms are basically takers, and your dot-orgs are givers, okay? And so I was in that taking mode forever. It was all about the bottom line and how hard I could work my employees. You know what I've learned? I've learned in these last years as I've left the corporate world and have dealt with companies like Investors Bank, it's not about that. It's about your health of your employees, your health of your employees. And I'm not talking about health, I have a cold. I'm talking about the health of their whole being. People who work for companies that give back work harder. People that work for companies that care about their communities invest more. And that is our corporate responsibility. It's our corporate responsibility to make sure that the nucleus of our company is based on strengthening the community and not taking so much from the community. That's just my take.
Wow. What a great explanation. Dennis Budnick of Investors Bank.
Well, you know, there's a saying, the generous heart prospers. And I would take that to a company also. A generous company prospers. And we talk about culture. And one of the things that you'll find is if you ask anyone at an Investors Bank, whether they do business with us or they work for us, they'll say, the one thing I love about the bank is its culture. We're a bank. I mean, we sell basic products, right? But our culture is unique. And it all starts at the top. If it wasn't for Kevin Cummings, the CEO and chairman, and Dominic Cammon, the president and chief operating officer, they believe in this. They think about this all the time. That's why they hired me. They say, hey, help us do this. We've been doing it before you got here, but help us take it to the next level. And so I do what I can to do that. But let's talk about how it impacts the company. For employees to share in experiences like Comfort Cases and doing packing parties and working for other organizations like Habitat, whatever. There's a list of great organizations out there. It's a shared experience that adds this value of spirit in the brand. It's pride in the brand. We could easily identify what Investors Bank stands for. We stand for generosity in our communities. That's what we stand for. And our bank helps us do that. So I always tell prospects, if you want to help the community, help us help the community. By you doing business with us, we take a portion of our profits and we strategically every year reinvest it back in our communities. So, but the employee engagement side, 85% of culture is what people believe in the company they work for and the people that they work with. And when people work together towards a bigger cause beyond the company, they take that enthusiasm and that hope and that optimism back to work. And they deliver it to each other and to the company. So we can't have a meeting and say, hey, everybody, you know, become more engaged. Right. We create activities like Comfort Cases so that we could walk away saying we did something great for the universe. And I feel honored and I feel great that I work for a company that not only supports it, but encourages it and says, hey, we're going to do this, right? You know, third day on the job at Investors Bank. Now, we haven't done this since the pandemic. But when you're new to the bank, on a third day, you dedicate three quarters of a day to a local soup kitchen as an onboarding experience joining the bank. We let our new employees know community service and doing good for people that need our help is part of our culture and part of our strategy. So there's a business case for this. There's no doubt about it.
I want to add one thing to that. Sure. I want to jump in and add one thing to that. You made a comment, and I want all the listeners to know, for someone who has seen this firsthand, people want to deal with companies that are giving back to their community. So yep, I want to bank at a bank and use my resources for a bank that I know that is building the foundation of my community. I want to shop at a store that I know that is giving back to my community. I want to go into a gas station that I know that is helping my community. And that's something we must understand. It is a turning point within our society that we are so conscious about how is that company helping the foundation of our community, just like your company has been doing for years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dennis, it's so great interviewing you, but I'm also enjoying the opportunity to have you as a co-host. So any questions you have for Rob on your mind?
Yeah. So Rob, the thing that interested me, and I thought that's one of probably besides your non-for-profit and the great work you're doing. I also thought it was unique that you started this with a high level of business savvy. Like you came in knowing how to be successful in business. Now, we're going to have non-for-profits listening to this broadcast. We're also going to have for-profits. And the uniqueness about your experience so far is you've applied the business savvy to your non-for-profit. But then once you got into the non-for-profit, you realized that businesses are missing out on something, right? So you're offering two things right now. But I would just want to narrow it down to what was the financial strategy moving in? Because now I'm talking a little bit beyond the passion now. How did you financially approach this?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, for those nonprofits that are listening and for profits, you know, you should always take your passion and make it into purpose. And that's exactly what I did. And I will tell you, when it came to our nonprofit, I run it like a business. I run it like a business. I run it like all the successful companies that I have been able to work for. And I think that that is so, so important. And what I did was I made sure that those who invested realized that their investment counted. That it counted. And where did it go? So many times I see nonprofits fail left and right because one, they do have the passion, okay? But they can't figure out the purpose. They can't get the business plan off the ground. I mean, let me tell you something. We did a business plan and we did a budget and we made sure that every single thing for the first 5 years of my organization, we were 100% volunteer ran. That didn't mean I didn't have a CEO, didn't mean that I didn't have a secretary, didn't mean that they were all volunteers. You know, because that's the way we built this organization so strong. We ran it like a business. And that's what we have to learn. We have to realize that, first of all, You cannot fill someone else's cup unless you fill your own. Get that. Okay. So you must understand that. So when what we did is we came together with like-minded people and truly strengthened the nonprofit of ours as if it's a business. And by the way, today we still run it that way.
Hmm. But Rob, now let's flip it. Now you're in a non-for-profit, and there had to be some aha moment saying, boy, if I had this energy and passion in a workplace, right, that I have in my non-for-profit. So there's a business case for this. And I want you to share what you discovered in your journey in Comfort Cases that you wish you knew when you were in business.
You know what, Dennis? This question is such an easy question for me. And let me tell you the reason why. I was passionate about the mortgage industry that I spent 27 years in. I was passionate about it and woke up every day as excited to go to work as I do for Comfort Cases, you know. And let me tell you the reason why. It saved my life. It saved my life. When I was a kid and had nowhere to go after the military, and I literally was on the streets again, the mortgage company saved my life. They gave me an opportunity. So for me, you know, that's the way I've lived my life. And as I tell nonprofits and I tell for-profit companies as I speak to them, you've got to be true to yourself, true to yourself, and then you can be true to your company.
Right. So I just want to back it up a little bit because I know a little bit more about your time in service. And I'm going to ask you, are you comfortable sharing that?
Of course. You know, I've written a memoir. I've got movies made after my family story. I of course, I would share it to your listeners.
So there's so many life lessons here based on your story that we could apply because we're all going through something, not to your degree and to children in foster. And we know that. But your story and your journey talks about endurance, and it talks about overcoming obstacles. It talks about hope in the future. Now, when you got to the Navy, something happened during your boot camp that was extra special. And then something happened right after that that also changed your life again. So could you share that?
So I will tell you, when I went into the boot camp, I was so excited to go to Great Lakes, Illinois. I was excited to be a part of something that nobody knew who I was or where I had come from. And so again, as I do everything in my life, I was going to give it all I got. And that's exactly what I did. I graduated from boot camp. And the most amazing thing is I graduated from boot camp as the honor man. For those of you who are listening and you've been in the Navy, you know how important that title is. That is when everyone from your company and division votes for one person that outstands everybody else when it comes to the type of human they are. And they voted for me. I won this award. I got a medal for this award. I couldn't believe it. You know, they actually loved me. I did matter. When I crossed that stage at boot camp, people clapped and cheered and they yelled, "Yay, Rob!" It was amazing. And then I went to my A school. Gosh, I was excited. I was excited to start my career in the military. I was excited that this was my future, my home, my family, my family. And then one day I woke up in a hospital. I remember the nurse walking in. And she said, "Seaman recruit, do you know why you're here?" I said, "No, ma'am." She says, "We had to do surgery." I said, what do you mean? I was sitting in my A's class. And she said, "Your bladder ruptured and we had to do emergency surgery." See, I told you in this beginning about feeling the cigarette on my leg that my father would put out. But there were also other things that my father would do to us children. He would punch us time and time again in our bladder anytime we went to the bathroom without asking him. He would punch us in our bladder anytime we would pee ourselves after he held the cold gun to our head and clicked it as if he was going to shoot us. And by the years and years of the mental abuse of holding myself so I couldn't feel the pain of being beat and punched, my bladder ruptured. Well, you know, the Navy fixed me. They put me back together. They made me whole. And I thought that would be it. But instead, I went back to my A school, and there was sitting Petty Officer Green with a yellow envelope in front of him and a tear in his eye. See, I had shared my story with Petty Officer Green about where I had come from and how important this was for me to be in the Navy. And instead, he looked at me and said, "I don't know how to say this, but we are having to give you a discharge, a medical discharge, and you've missed it by 3 weeks to be paid for the rest of your life. But here's a one-way plane ticket back to Virginia and 1 month pay." I remember flying back to Virginia, not knowing what to do, as I hitchhiked down Route 7 and found a hotel that actually rented by the week. I had enough money, I knew, to last me for a little bit of time, and I would hitchhike into town, and I got a job at the DART. You know, it's like a Target back in those days. And finally, when I was at the point where I was just ready to go and live on the streets, I did what I had done. I went to my safe place, the public library. I pulled out a piece of paper. I stuck it in a typewriter. I grabbed a telephone book, and I proceeded to call companies listed. And every time I would hear the operator go, beep, 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 I would write that company's name down. And then I went to the white pages and I started calling people. And every time I would hear the beep, 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 knowing the number was disconnected, I'd write that name down. And then I typed myself a resume. I typed myself a resume so great you all would have hired me. And then I went to the Salvation Army. I bought a suit. And I started walking the streets applying for jobs. And I walked into a bank, a mortgage company. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to jail. They're going to find out that my resume is a lie and they are going to throw me in jail. But instead, they hired me on the spot. I couldn't believe it. I was getting a real job. I remember my boss would tell me to come to work at 8 a.m. and I'd get there at 6. He'd tell me to leave at 6 and I'd stay till 8. I worked my butt off. I became, you know, just a clerk. And then the next thing you know, I was a junior processor. And then I was a processor. And I was already getting ready to get my underwriting degree. And I was managing processors. And then I couldn't deal with it anymore. The lie. I walked into his office and I handed him my letter of resignation. He said, "What is this?" I said, "I have to quit." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You're my best employee." He's like, "You've worked so hard these last couple of years." At that time, I had bought a car. I had my own apartment. I was actually had food in my refrigerator. He said, "You remember that resume that I handed you?" I said, "Yeah, it's over there in the HR drawer." He said, "It was all lies. Everything on it was a lie." He said, "What do you mean?" And then I told him my story of how close I was to eating out of the trash cans that he walked by every day. And I just couldn't see my life like that again. He ripped up my letter of resignation and he looked at me and he said, "Rob, you're the most honest person I've ever met. You're so humble." He says, "Do me a favor." I said, "What's that?" "Get back to work." And after that, I did it. I climbed that corporate ladder like you would not believe. For 15 years, the last 15 years, I've been an executive. So I have lived that. I have lived from the trenches of trenches to the top of the top. But I will tell you, the three things my community had always taught me was that if I bought a big house and had a fancy car and had lots of money, that life was all great. By a tough way, that's not what it's about. It's about your family. It's about your community. And it's about your dash. I knew at that moment I wanted my dash to shine. I knew at that moment, as I have my children, all five of them, that when they walk by their daddy's dash, they know he just didn't talk about it. He actually did it.
Yeah. And that's a powerful story about honesty, because you didn't know the consequences. You did not know what your boss was going to say.
No, I expected him to say, "Get the hell out of my office. You're fired." You know, yeah, I mean, I totally was expecting. That's what I was expecting. And then I thought to myself, what was I going to do then? I wasn't going to be able to use him as a reference, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. Tonight's show, brought to you by Investors Bank, is the first in an amazing series, the Business Exchange Broadcast. In case you're just tuned in, no worries, because this will, of course, turn into a very popular YouTube episode and go up on our podcasting channels, of course, on Spotify and iTunes and the other, you know, the many of the channels you consume your media. Of course, MYB Radio is the platform that hosts every single show that we've had on this program. Tonight's show, brought to you by Investors Bank, is the first in a series, the Business Exchange Broadcast. And it's the brainchild of Dennis Budnick, who is the Chief Culture Officer at Investors Bank. And he was so kind to bring onto the set Rob Scheer, CEO of Comfort Cases. Dennis, perhaps you could, I'm going to hand it to you, but I'm so curious, how did you guys get together?
You know, it's pretty interesting because I was given an opportunity to build a leadership program for the bank. And I like case studying leaders. And the choice was, well, do we have our leaders case study, you know, gentlemen like Jack Welch or business leaders, although they're very successful and there's a lot of good lessons to learn. I wanted to mix it up a little bit and introduce our people to other types of leaders, because my belief is, you know, it's not about learning what leadership is. It's about learning how to take the lead. It's about taking the lead. And so the whole theme of the program was, can we take the lead? And you don't need to be, you don't need to have the title to take a lead. You just have to take the lead. And so I just ran through and found a bunch of CNN heroes. And Rob was the first one I found. And when I read his story, I was like, this is incredible. Here's someone that saw something that this situation needed someone to take the lead, and he decided to do that. So I called him up. I had someone actually reach out on my staff to email, and then we chatted on the phone. I said, Rob, I mean, I know a little bit about your story, but I'd like to have a conversation. He says, when and where? And I'm like, well, where are you? And he said, I'm in Delaware. And I'm like, you want to drive up to Jersey? He said, you just tell me when, and I would be more than happy to meet you in person, because this is about people. And so I said, well, let me see if I could get my CEO chairman to join us. And Kevin Cummings was more than happy to do that. And we went out to dinner. And I'm going to tell you, I could talk a lot. But when Rob started talking, and Kevin could talk a lot too, we sat there and we didn't know what to say for 40 minutes. We were just struck emotionally with, wow, I can't believe this is going on right in our community. And at that point, we made a donation right at that table. And we said, we're starting the relationship right now. And then it just started to build from there. But I've reached out to Rob and said, Rob, could you talk to our leadership class? Rob traveled up in person and sat in front of our executives and showed the scars on his legs. And here's the interesting thing that happened. People said, we should take the lead on this as an organization in the state of New Jersey. And that's exactly what I wanted them to feel. We can make a difference. We can make a difference in a workplace. We could also make a difference in the community. But Rob, I just want to ask you a question. Why did you drive up? We could have done a conference call. I mean, I'd have saved you a lot of gas and a lot of time, but you didn't make that choice. You didn't even think about it. You said when and where. Why so quick?
No, I didn't think about it at all. Just like I don't think about it in any given day when I have an opportunity to meet amazing, powerful people who are changing their community. And when someone from your organization called me and talked about exactly what you were doing, and then when you and I spoke, and I could just hear the passion about how you were trying to change the culture of people and things, I had to be involved, and I had to let you tell my, I had to tell my story by you seeing me and not just on a conference call. So it was the best drive ever. It was worth. And you know, the thing that I love the most, Dennis, is that, you know, that did lead to that night, Kevin writing an amazing check to our organization. And I was still actually in the corporate world at that point. I had not even left my job to be a public speaker yet. But what I love the most about this story is how you and I have become such good friends. and how like-minded people have come together and how you and I truly have become good friends. And to the point where no matter where I am in the country and you call me and say, hey, I got a group that needs to be, I make it happen. Why? Because you're my friend. And that to me is so important.
So what would be your advice to a business owner or a someone that works for a company that has responsibilities of being out there and building a business out in the community and also the non-for-profits? What's the lesson learned here?
You know, the one thing I have to tell you that I say this to all my team every single day, and I said it to my corporate team back when I was a .com, was if I will not do it, then how can I ask you to do it? You know, if I won't get in my car and invest in this relationship, how can I ask you to do it? You know, and so to me, that's so, so important. We must lead by example. Lead by example. You said it. You don't have to have a title to, we're all leaders, but we all have the opportunity and the ability, especially when it comes to CEOs, founders, owners of companies. You have to lead by example. That is so critical. People ask me all the time, how did I become so successful? How did every company that I touch have was like the Midas gold touch? Why? I treated my employees like I would want them to treat me. With respect, I was humble. I led by example. I sat next to them at their desk and said, what are you doing? I want to learn it too. You know, right, you've got to have that passion.
Yeah. So I know that, we have many people. One of the things that sometimes we do is we cut the checks, and it was easy to cut you a check, but we didn't stop there. We started to have packing parties. We started to collect toiletries and, you know, stuffed animals and pajamas. And that's where the real enthusiasm came. That's where the real emotion started to, we created this emotional momentum because people were participating in this. So another lesson learned is that, yes, you need financial help, but the real value to the company beyond the check is having the employees participate in the solution. And we have people tell me all the time, hey, when are we having a packing party? I'm waiting for COVID. I'm waiting for this thing to, so it's safe for us to get back together again. But over and over again, people want to help. And not just your organization. We've created this spirit of generosity, and it's overflowing into the workplace. People are just being generous towards each other. You can't hold this back when you have that generous spirit. So I thank you for what you helped me and investors do for our employees. And that is bring a higher level of hope and engagement to the workplace. And you have a lot to do with that.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, I truly do believe that it's so important that companies give their employees an opportunity to have hands-on experience. Don't just always write the check. You know, I have corporations who come to me all the time and they're like, you know, they want to be my corporate sponsor. I mean, it was up for years until you guys were actually one of my first corporate sponsors. And the reason I said no is because I say to people all the time, huge corporations, I don't need your money. What I need is I need your time. You know, your money is nice, and yes, you can write the check, but if you're not going to stand next to me and help me fight the fight of the children who are in our system that deserve us, then I don't really need you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Comfort Cases, and I would love for each and every one of you to visit our website and see how you can be a part of the change, just like Investors Bank did.
Dennis. You took the question to Rob out of my mouth. So,
Rob
hit it. It's great. I'm not questioning you. I'm saying this is so much fun having you on the set with me. But now I got to give you a chance. You know, Dennis, you have a lot of experience out there. What's a tip that you could share with the tens of thousands of listeners of Mind Your Business?
Well, here's one thing I've learned being involved in this is that people want to be active in activities that create hope and optimism and make people feel good. And sometimes we say, well, you know, they're coming to work. They should feel good. Well, you know what? No, that's wrong. That's wrong. We have a lot of stress in the world today. We have a lot of distractions that steal our peace, our hope, and our happiness. And I look at organizations like Rob and other organizations that we use, we're going to learn more about in our series, because we have more than we have other great organizations we want to bring to the table. But this is like an oasis from the chaos in the world, because sometimes our people, we all feel hopeless, but we're not totally hopeless. There are ways that we could contribute to our communities, and it starts with our families. It starts with our communities. So what I've learned is if anyone's interested in building a culture where people believe that the brand they work for, the company work for, means something in the community, that we want to make a difference, that we value the people, whether they're customers or not, then this is a great thing to do, because participation in causes bigger than the organization is where the spirit lies. And then people create that spirit and that energy, and they bring it to work with them. That's the case study on that. That's the case benefit. So what people do in a packing party, they get excited. But when they get back to work on Monday, they're calling Mary. And Mary, wasn't that a great time Friday? We did something really great. I know. Hey, while I have you on the phone, I was thinking, could we work on this project? Yeah. We kind of work. You see, you can't deny that. It just happens. You know the great thing? You don't have to push it. People just do it. They just do it. So that's a big thing for businesses today, because people want to feel good while they're at work. And these are one of the things that contributes to that. And it kind of deflects and distracts us from all the chaos and anxieties of the world we live in.
You know, people ask me frequently, what's the biggest challenge about doing this show? And that is running into the clock.
Yeah.
Because we could go on for another few hours without question. What an amazing show. Wow. Rob Scheer, CEO of Comfort Cases, and Dennis Budnick, Chief Culture Officer at Investors Bank. And tonight's show, brought to you by Investors Bank, is the first in a series of the Business Exchange broadcast. Well, this wraps up an amazing edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next time. Wait. Before, remember, by Tuesday morning, this episode will be up at MYBRadio.com and, of course, all the popular podcasting channels. Wow. What an amazing edition. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 710 WOR and the IR Radio Network. Have a successful week.
710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network present Mind Your Business, hosted by the president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Founded in 1992, Bottom Line Marketing Group is a strategic, creative, and execution-driven marketing agency, helping businesses by clarifying and promoting their vision, mission, and purpose to support its lead generation and customer retention initiatives to gain market share in their industry. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. for this intriguing radio show as Yitzhak interviews Fortune 500 executives, business leaders, and marketing gurus from a wide variety of business industries. Now, Yitzhak and his guests offer their knowledge and expertise to help you be successful. Every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.